This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Last month, a school board in Pennsylvania voted 6-3 to require science teachers in its public schools to include in their biology classes an idea called intelligent design. Now, intelligent design proponents say that some parts of life are just too complex to be the product of evolution. An intelligent designer doesn't say who that might be. Maybe God, perhaps aliens. It doesn't say. An intelligent designer probably had to become involved. Evolution alone, they say, doesn't explain the origin of species. Well, a majority of the school board in Dover, Pennsylvania, agreed and voted that students there should be taught in science class ideas contrary to what the overwhelming majority of scientists believe about the origin of species. The Dover, Pennsylvania School District is the first to mandate that a specific alternative be taught. Aside from Pennsylvania, challenges to teaching evolution and attempts to have the biblical account of creation inserted in science classes have recently made headlines in Georgia and Wisconsin. In Cobb County, Georgia, legal arguments have just ended in a case where a local school district required stickers to be put on a biology textbook, warning students that the evolution they were about to encounter was just a theory. In Grantsburg, Wisconsin, the science curriculum was changed to allow for various models and theories of evolution to be taught in science class. Some say it's a thinly veiled attempt to bring creation into science class. This hour, we're going to look at some of these cases. We're going to focus in on this Dover School Board in Pennsylvania. We're going to be talking with two of the board members who resigned because of the school board decision. Will it now, then, be up to the courts to decide what gets taught in science class? And how much does what President Bush thinks about evolution invigorate the creation in the classroom supporters? President Bush is on record as saying, quote, on the issue of evolution, the verdict is still out on how God created the earth. So if you'd like to get involved, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Joining me now to talk about what happened in Dover Area School District in Pennsylvania are Jeff and Carol Brown, two board members who resigned in protest over the vote of the school board. I should mention that we invited several of the board members who voted in favor of including intelligent design to join us today, but they never returned our phone calls. Neither did the superintendent of school district. He declined to be interviewed, citing advice from his lawyers. Jeff and Carol Brown were recently members of the school board in Dover Area School District in Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to read today, posted from the website in the Dover Area School District website, is something that just went up at noon today, a statement. And I want to read it so people can understand what we're talking about. The statement says, the biology curriculum was updated to include the following statement, quote, students will be made aware of gaps, problems in Darwin's theory and of other theories of evolution, including but not limited to intelligent design, the origins of life is not taught. Another section says, because Darwin's theory is a theory, it is still being tested as new evidence is discovered. The theory is not a fact. Gaps in the theory exist for which there is no evidence. A theory is defined as a well-tested explanation that unifies a broad range of observations. Intelligent design is an explanation of the origin of life that differs from Darwin's view. The reference book of Pandas and People is available for students to see if they would like to explore this view in an effort to gain an understanding of what intelligent design actually involves. As is true with any theory, students are encouraged to keep an open mind. The school leaves the discussion of the origin of life up to individual students and their families. Carol Brown, what forced you to resign?
Well, after 10 years on the board, I realized that I was at a point where I could no longer represent the interests of all of the members of the community, because that's what I was elected to do, not the interests of a small group or an individual, but the interests of all of the members of the community, and I was no longer able to do that.
How did this change in the curriculum come about?
It began not quite a year ago. Discussions came up regarding the proposed new biology text, which is by Prentice Hall. Mm-hmm. And the chairperson of the curriculum committee, Mr. Buckingham, William Buckingham, was opposed to the text. he cited 16 mentions of Darwin and Darwin's theories in a 1,400-page textbook. And he said that he would not present it to the board for approval, and he thought that we should look further. Mm-hmm. So we discussed it. And at no point in the textbook, in no chapter of the textbook, is there any mention of the so-called controversial theory of the descent of man, which Darwin promulgated. The discussion centers about Darwin's theory of natural selection, which is, in essence, survival of the fittest. If a species cannot adapt, then that species dies out. Mm-hmm. And that's all we have ever taught in Dover, and that is what is mandated by the state curriculum.
Mm-hmm. But then this requirement that you teach intelligent design was put in.
Yes. That was finally approved in October. We did not, we did not hear anything about this textbook until this summer, so-called textbook.
That's the Of Pandas and People?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it is not a high school level text to begin with. It is written for a college level group of students. So in the information, the manner in which it's presented, just the language, it's not appropriate for ninth graders. That alone, to me, means it's not a worthwhile addition to the classroom. But that was not my objection to it.
And your objection was?
My objection was I see this as an attempt to put a specific religious viewpoint into the classroom that is contrary to the 1987 Supreme Court ruling.
And did the school board call into question your own faith?
Yes, frequently.
Tell us about that.
Well, one of the things, I would never presume to ask anyone what his or her faith is. That's of no importance in serving on the school board. And as I said, we're there to represent all of the members of the community and all of our students, and that includes students of all faiths. And I was asked, actually on three separate occasions, whether or not I was a born-again Christian, whether I had been saved. And although I didn't go off in anger, I was very offended by that. Because that is a matter between me and my God, if you will, mm-hmm. and my pastor.
So the school board asked you that question on many occasions?
Three different individuals who were on the school board did.
Did they seem that as almost a requirement to be on the school board?
Well, since I had been on the school board prior to any of the other members, that would have been a little difficult mm-hmm. because I was the most senior member of the board.
Jeff Brown, why did you object to having intellectual design included in the curriculum?
Well, one thing you pointed out when you were reading that statement, it said, a theory must be well tested. Intelligent design is not well tested. It hasn't been tested at all. And the fact of the matter is, it cannot be tested. I'm waiting for someone to submit as an experiment any kind of experiment that would prove or disprove this intelligent intervention. It's a supposition that's essentially unprovable, and they've never, to my knowledge, and no one's ever attempted to prove it. They've just simply thrown it out there and said, well, this is a counter theory. And I'm like, yeah. And the fact that the universe came from a giant Cracker Jack box is another possible theory, but you can't prove that one either. It's not science.
Mm-hmm. And how is this? How is your idea received?
not well.
Not well. That's the best way to put it. Basically, I was ostracized, and people that I considered to be friends stopped talking to me.
On the school board, or just
on the school board? Yeah. off the school board to some degree, too, but I'm specifically referring to the school board itself.
How did, Casey, how did the community react, the school, you know, people who have their children in the school?
To us or to the other?
Either way, give us both of them.
Okay. The response to our point of view has been overwhelmingly positive, which gives me heart. Mm-hmm. We have had no negative comments here at home. We've received no negative calls. I know there are people who disagree with this, and that's fine. But my point, too, besides the fact this is against the law, is that we are stigmatizing any student who is not of this particular religious belief. And although we are a fairly homogeneous population in this community, we do have minority students. And their faiths, plural, excuse me, are no less valid than that of any member of a mainstream Christian church.
Another point that might be brought up is not all Christians believe that the book of Genesis is to be taken as a literal fact.
Very true.
So, this is actually, because she's right, our community is probably 90% Christian. This is really an argument between Christians who believe that the Bible, every single word of it, is a literal fact and cannot be challenged, and Christians who feel that, you know, there may be more parables in the Bible than are clearly labeled as such. I know an awful lot of Christians who don't have a problem with evolution, but this is a segment of the Christian community that does, and their feeling is that by teaching evolution and not teaching their side, and that's their word, their side, we're not giving the kids a well-rounded education. My understanding of the law is, if we're going to teach their side, we have to teach everybody's side.
And I did offer that suggestion. I have offered it repeatedly over the past 4 years. Why not offer a comparative religions course in the high school to give students an opportunity to learn about the religions of the world, the beliefs of each one? And as I pointed out, the underlying factor in every single faith is basically what we call the golden rule. Treat other people the way you want to be treated. And that was not well received.
Do you think this is going to wind up in the courts someplace?
Yes.
Very much so, unfortunately, because I don't want to see this happen to our community.
And do you think that who might bring the suit?
I would imagine more than one organization.
Well, there was an article in our local paper yesterday that the ACLU has been looking into it and have received, by their account, numerous complaints from people in this district who want them to bring suit. So that tells me there's probably going to be a lawsuit.
At least one, if not more. And, of course, the members of this community have the option to go to the courts to remove the board if they wish.
Either of you going to run again for the school board?
I am. I barely resigned from the board before I decided I think I have to run again, essentially because, you know, well, we've become symbols of opposition to this in the community.
All right, I've got to go, but we're going to continue this on the other side of the hour. I want to thank you very much, both of you.
You're more than welcome.
Jeff and Carol Brown, for taking time to talk with us.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck to you. Jeff and Carol Brown, until recently members of the school board for the Dover Area School District in Pennsylvania. Short break. We'll come back, talk about the legal ramifications, other aspects to the story, where it's happening in other places, and your opinion. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about teaching evolution, creation, and intelligent design, call it what you'd like, in biology classes in high schools around the country. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my other guests. Kenneth Miller is professor of biology at Brown University in Rhode Island. He's also the author of Finding Darwin's God, A Scientist's Search for Common Ground Between God and Evolution. And he's co-author of that biology textbook that is the center of controversy in Georgia and Pennsylvania. He joins us today from WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Miller.
Thanks a lot, Ira. Happy to be here.
Welcome. Charles Haynes is a senior scholar and the director of education programs at the First Amendment Center in Arlington, Virginia. He joins us from our NPR studios in Washington. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Haynes.
Well, thanks for having me, Ira.
You're welcome. David K. DeWolf is an attorney and professor of law at Gonzaga University School of Law. He is also a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. He joins us today from NPR member station KPBX in Spokane, Washington. Welcome to Science Friday, Mr. DeWolf.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Nick Matzie is a public information project specialist at the National Center for Science Education in Oakland, California. He joins us by phone. Thanks for being with us today, Mr. Matzie.
Thanks for having me.
Let me begin with you, Kenneth Miller. It's your textbook that seems to be the source of this controversy in Pennsylvania. Is evolution too much of a hot potato to be included in public school science classes these days?
God, I sure hope not. I think most biologists would agree that evolution is not just an important topic. It's the central organizing principle of biology. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I have sort of a perverse pride that the textbook that Joe Levine and I wrote is at the center of the controversy, because that tells me that we really did fairly present evolution as the central idea in biology. And I have to tell you that I think these controversies would still exist even if the boards had picked another textbook. And the reason for that is I think all of the textbooks produced by the other major publishers do a good job of representing the scientific evidence for evolution, presenting it fairly, and giving teachers the tools that they need to educate kids in all areas of biology, including evolution.
Charles Haynes, tell us about the stickers on textbooks in Georgia warning students that evolution is a theory, not a fact. It's sort of kind of similar to what we just heard that's going on here in Pennsylvania for the statement that it should be read to the students.
Well, this is one story out of many that are happening. It's a long history of fighting over this, or people shouting past one another. I mean, the Georgia battle is symbolic. It's trying to signal to students that there is actually something wrong with what they're going to read in this textbook, that their religious view is not necessarily wrong. So it's kind of a billboard, if you will, to try to alert them. And it's a misuse of the word theory, frankly, because it plays on people's common use of the word and not on how it's used in the science community.
You mean the term evolution?
No, the word theory.
I'm sorry, theory, yeah.
Yeah, the word theory. I mean, and so, you know, when they say something is a theory and not a fact, it sounds to most people like, well, it's not really that serious, you know, it's something that's not substantial. But, of course, the way the word theory is used in science, as you said earlier in the program, has much more to it. This is, unfortunately, mostly a political religious fight in all of these communities. It's rarely a fight about the real issue, which is what is good science and what is a good science education. And we've had this problem for, you know, much of the 20th century and now into the 21st century of shouting past one another on this issue. And when local boards vote on it, frankly, or state boards, they don't know what they're voting on. I mean, with all due respect, most board members have no clue as to what is science in all of this. They're not qualified. Who is? Very few of us are. So the scientific community, writ large, the establishment, the most scientists, tell us this is what we think you need to be teaching in a science classroom. Others object. But then they battle it out in these board meetings where people voting on either side actually don't know what they're voting on.
Well, maybe they do know what they're voting on and they still vote that way.
Well, they know that they're voting because they are angry about evolution. Mm-hmm. They think evolution represents to them a challenge to their deeply held beliefs. It represents a danger, they believe, to understanding the human, to moral life. I mean, it's a symbol of something that really they think has gone badly wrong. So they know, many people understand that. But when they vote on it, they vote without really the scientific knowledge or understanding that is necessary to determine what should go into science education. They are relying on people on different sides. The other problem when they vote is that they don't follow up and say, well, you know, if we're going to open up the science classroom to alternative scientific theories, we better prepare teachers, educate them about this controversy, help them to understand what's at stake. Instead, for the most part, they leave the poor teacher out on a limb to sort of somehow deal with this without knowing exactly what they are teaching either.
Mm-hmm. David DeWolf, the ACLU has, is that, give us a little brief on the Georgia case. The ACLU, is it suing now the school board or the school district?
A parent in the school district is suing the school board, alleging that the sticker that's used by the school district violates the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. So that's the basis of that claim.
Mm-hmm. Do they have any legal ground for winning, do you think?
Well, it's the case is being now considered by the judge. We'll find out what the judge thinks. But there are only three sentences in the sticker, and I think the more important point in Georgia is that what went unchallenged by anybody in that district was the adoption by the board of a policy that asked the teachers to present the issue of Darwinian evolution not only in the case in favor of it, but also to look at the evidence that contradicts it. And that's the point that we want to emphasize, is that the need to move beyond a dogmatic and devotional approach to this issue and really treat it scientifically.
What challenges are you talking about?
Well, I think the reality is that there's a lively controversy in science about the sufficiency of the Darwinian explanation for biological complexity. There's also a lively debate about whether the complex features we observe in biological organisms are properly explained by some undirected natural process, or whether they point, as they do in other scientific areas, to the likelihood of a design. And this debate takes place in a wide variety of settings at a very high level. Recently, the Cambridge University Press published a book entitled Debating Design, with a variety of scientists both making the case for design and criticizing the case for design and defending the traditional Darwinian position. Mm-hmm. And when school boards find out about this debate, they think, gee, our students would really benefit from learning about it. And I think that's a great educational idea, and I don't see any legal reason why students should be prevented from learning about it.
Does intelligent design rule out Martians or aliens or any other intelligent beings from coming to Earth and starting us?
Well, as in other scientific areas, you begin by looking at a phenomenon, for example, a body that's at the bottom of the stairs, and you ask the question scientifically, is this explained, for example, by a seizure or by a blood clot or by poisoning, or is it more likely the result
of some... I'm talking about the intelligent design here. Does it rule? I mean, it says, from what I hear, it doesn't make any specific mentions of who the intelligent designer is. So that you could not rule out any, you know, another extraterrestrial coming to Earth and having started the human race.
Well, the point of the Darwinian project is to provide an explanation without the use of any sort of intelligent process, that natural processes by themselves through random mutation and natural selection can generate complex organisms of marvelous complexity. The question is whether, as you investigate that scientifically, does the evidence bear that out, or does the evidence point, as you would in a murder investigation, to say, gee, I don't think this is likely explained by a natural cause. Who the intelligent agent is that is responsible for the phenomenon is a separate question after you've determined whether it's more likely explained by a natural cause.
Nick Matz, what are your objections to that sticker on the biology textbook in Cobb County?
Well, the sticker states that evolution is a theory, not a fact, regarding the origin of living things. And that is really a mischaracterization of the words theory and fact, because, you know, a scientific theory is a well-confirmed explanation. So it's like cell theory and atomic theory and, you know, many other well-confirmed theories that are taught in textbooks. So that disclaimer pulls evolution out for special criticism, which is really scientifically not justified. And the reason I think that court case is challengeable, I mean, the disclaimer by itself is fairly clean. You know, it doesn't mention creationism, but the whole history of the issue in Cobb County makes the link to creationism pretty clear, because the reason the school board passed that disclaimer was that a young Earth creationist in Cobb County arranged a big signature petition objecting to evolution education, and that's what got the ball rolling a couple years ago. And then under this pressure, the school board passed this policy. And so you can see, you know, when you look at creationism and how it's evolved over the last 15 years, It's gone from creationism to intelligent design to evidence against evolution, and it's always the same people with the same kinds of motivations. They all think evolution is, you know, bad for society. Evolution is the root of societal evils, and that's pretty much why they're going for this. If you look at the scientific arguments, like, for example, in that Pandas and People book, that intelligent design textbook, which was first published in 1989, it's the first intelligent design book that ever has been published. It was a textbook that was published first before the whole theoretical scientific movement of intelligent design. You look in it, and you can find several statements that are clearly, you know, creationist references to the Bible, and you can also find many things that are just outright false.
Mm-hmm. Kenneth Miller, any reaction?
Yeah, I've got a lot to say. The disclaimer in Georgia has many problems with it, and Nick alluded to some of them. It only has three sentences. It says this book contains material on evolution. Well, of course it does, because the back cover of our book has the word evolution stamped on it as one of the units, so that's redundant. When you say evolution is a theory, not a fact, that makes it sound, it misteaches the use of the word theory, as pointed it's already been made. It makes it sound like something can either be a theory or a fact. Theories are not shaky ideas that become facts when we become certain of them. Rather, theories explain facts. And in that respect, to say it's a theory, not a fact, mischaracterizes evolution. And finally, and I think the most destructive part of the disclaimer that's on the textbooks in Georgia is the last sentence. And it says something to the effect that students are urged to study this material carefully, critically examine it, and consider it with an open mind. Now think about what that means to a student. It means to a student that you're supposed to do this to evolution, but that every other topic in that book need not be critically considered or examined with an open mind. It's like telling them we're certain of everything in science except for evolution. And I can't think of a worse policy in terms of scientific education. And unfortunately, that's what this the intelligent design movement has led to. A lot of bad teaching, a lot of bad ideas about science, and as you heard from the school board members in Dover, a lot of personal conflict at a local level, which I think is needless and unnecessary if science is taught well and taught properly.
David DeWolf, as an attorney and a professor and a fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, can you tell us why that the Discovery Institute has not taken the side of the school board in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think there's a distinction between the state of intelligent design theory as a way of exploring the scientific question and the policy of mandating it as part of the curriculum. We think it's a great idea if a teacher has the urge to present this debate in a way, just as the Cambridge University Press presented the debate, obviously made age appropriate in terms of the way the concepts are explained. But if a teacher has that urge, go right ahead and do that. We believe that's legally permissible and great education. On the other hand, from the standpoint of the school board, as was said earlier, lots of teachers are only beginning to learn about this. They're not necessarily prepared to present it in that way. And at this stage, we think it's we're not yet ready to mandate it. But
Just because you don't believe it's solid enough yet?
Well, again, as educational policy, you proceed incrementally to go with what you have. And at this stage, few teachers are in a position to present this debate, and we don't think we ought to mandate it. But we think it's good education, and where teachers have the desire to do it, they should be permitted to do it.
I just got to get a break in here so we can pay the bills. We're talking about creation evolution this hour, Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Jump in right there. Is that Kenneth?
Yeah, it is, okay. As a matter of fact. This is Ken Miller. When Attorney DeWolf said we don't want to mandate it, I think there's a pretty good reason for not mandating the teaching of intelligent design, and that is, and this is something that's become apparent to people in Ohio and people in Kansas and people in Pennsylvania who have looked at the issue, and that is there's nothing to teach. And what I mean by that is, and I was one of the essayists in the Cambridge University volume that he is referring to, and what you see in that is that there simply is, even in the views of its proponents, there is no evidence for design, and that the papers in that booklet talking about design are really a collection of arguments against Darwinism, against evolution, I should say. Arguments that I might add are pretty easily refuted. Your listeners can see that for themselves. In April of 2002, there was an issue of Natural History magazine in which Natural History gave three pages to three of the leading proponents of the intelligent design movement and said, take your best shot. And then they asked three scientists to answer those best shots, and it turned out to be remarkably easy to do. So it turns out, in terms of an intelligent design curriculum, there's nothing to teach except the religiously inspired critique of evolution.
Ira, may I jump in a second? It's Charles Haynes.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that the scientific community here needs to do, I think, a better job of addressing this controversy, because it may win the battle in these states and so forth, and ultimately in the courts, but it might lose the war for hearts and minds of people. I mean, many Americans just simply haven't accepted what they're being taught in their science classroom, partly not the fault of scientists, I don't think, but because the way it's taught is often dumbed down, avoided. Don't say the E word. I mean, we're really struggling in public education because there's this polarized debate that's political and religious, and it really doesn't. It leaves science education, I think, in danger and at risk. And our country can't afford bad science education. We need good science education. So I guess what I'm saying is that under the First Amendment framework here, the science community has to take some responsibility to really help the American people understand the debate in the science community. And, yeah, let's face the controversy and deal with it. And then when public schools are advised what they should do, it should be based on what is good science. And public schools cannot be the battleground, and then you work back to that, to science. You have to. Public schools are conservative places. They're places where we teach what is generally agreed on, the prevailing view. I would love to see more controversies taught, but
aren't we talking really at the bottom line about religion here? And if it's someone's religious view, and they're allowed to have that view, that God did it, there's no amount of arguing or cajoling or scientific evidence that's going to convince anybody that God didn't do it.
Well,
if you have a school board that says God did it and wants to teach it that way,
But if it is a religious view that's being promoted, if it is, in whatever these cases are, then we can teach about religious views or worldviews in public schools. Probably the best place to do that is in the social studies, and prepare teachers to say, look, there are different worldviews, and let kids in on that discussion and let them see that people see the world differently. So teaching about religious views, I mean, if science classrooms had time and people had the expertise, they could teach the history of science, philosophy of science, and religion and science have had a long conversation and still do today.
Yeah.
So I think it could be in there.
Yeah.
But again, it has to be done in a way that doesn't suggest that religion is actually science.
All right, let me go back. We'll come back. We have to take a short break and come back and finish our discussion about science, religion, creation, evolution in the classroom. Stay with us. We'll try to get to the phones when we come back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking about science and evolution and creationism in the classroom this hour with my guest, Kevin Miller, professor of biology at Brown University, author of Finding Darwin's God, Scientists Search for Common Ground Between God and Evolution, Charles Haynes, director of education programs at the First Amendment Center, David K. DeWolf, professor of law at Gonzaga University School of Law and a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, Nick Matzey, public information project specialist at the National Center for Science Education. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in here before we have to go. Jameson in Valdosta, Georgia. Hi, Jameson.
Hey, how are you?
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm a student at Valdosta State University. I'm studying to be a high school teacher myself, and also I'm a Christian, so I have both. I have opinions based on both of those backgrounds. I have a couple of comments. First of all, being done with high school and have experienced that, and now experiencing a university, I notice a lot that when the idea of intelligent design is attacked, and not giving that a negative connotation, but it is attacked, that it seems that the Christian religion, specifically Protestant, is the only religion that is seen to go along with the idea of intelligent design. From my knowledge and my study of other religions, it's very rare that you don't find a religion that believes in a higher being that has created the origin of man. For instance, Islam believes in many different ways that Allah created mankind. They're all different, but the point of my first comment is that I think it's almost unfair to a Protestant that they're the only ones that get the bad rap for the idea of intelligent design. And secondly, as a soon-to-be teacher, I've learned that my role, my job, is to facilitate to my students, whether I teach history or biology, what I know to be a fact, not necessarily my opinions, but things that are significant to me, in order for them to find out what's significant to them through creating their own conclusions. I don't think that evolution should not be taught. I think it's a valid theory. I think it's good science. I'm not against it. But it is, nonetheless, it has gaps in it. And I think that as a facilitator of ideas, if I leave my students with gaps, I'm not really doing my job to facilitate a path for them to think for their own and come up with their own conclusions. Therefore,
you don't want to teach them to be good enough scientists that they could fill the gaps.
Well, I want to facilitate to them all the possibilities, whether it's evolution, intelligent design, and whatever else together, present it to them in the best way that I know how, exhaust my resources to do that, unbiasedly to each area, and allow that student to come with their own conclusion. It goes back to the Socratic method. Have, you know, just ask questions and let them come up with the answers. But if I teach them a method that does have gaps in it, and I'm not saying that the evolution theory is wrong. I'm not saying that. But it does have gaps, and I think that if I teach them only that, then I have failed as a facilitator.
Nick, let me get a reaction. Nick Matsky?
Yeah, sure. The problem usually is that, you know, I don't know exactly what this teacher would teach, but oftentimes this terminology about gaps talks about gaps that actually where the holes have been filled in. And oftentimes the gaps are exaggerated because creationists in particular, you know, they have particular problems with, for example, human evolution or whale evolution or something like that, and they just either try and write off or ignore many of the fossils that have been found. And you can see an example of this in that Intelligent Design of Pandas and People textbook. The last edition was published in 1993, and in that book it says, you know, there's no transitional fossils for the evolution of whales from walking mammals. But then by 1994, they had several of these fossils that had been discovered, you know, and you can see them in National Geographic, and they've been published in Science and Nature magazine and all these places. So these gaps are very often illusions, and oftentimes these get mentioned because when a policy says, oh, we just want to teach the gaps, what they mean is we want to teach creationist arguments about the gaps. So, you know, it's difficult to say what an individual would teach, but that is often how it goes, and many times it's just plain inaccurate.
Good luck to you, Jameson.
Well, myself, I'm planning on being a history teacher, and when I plan on teaching the Civil War, I plan on teaching both sides of it. You know, what each side thinks about it and why they fought for what they fought for. I think it would be wrong of me to teach only one, and I think that anybody that would disagree with that would disagree with the basic fundamentals of education and being a facilitator. Like I said, I think that evolution should be taught. We'll just say that's the north side, but I think that the south side should be taught as well.
Okay.
Can I say something?
Yes, go ahead.
This is basically the fairness argument that we're hearing. And this argument appeals, you know, it appeals to fundamental American values because everyone thinks, you know, everyone deserves to be heard. And you know, everyone deserves a fair shot. And that's true in the public arena. In a school, however, you really have a limited amount of time, and you just all you have time to do is teach the basic science that's available. And so when you hear about talking both sides in science, do you really want, you know, if you apply this to other examples, it would lead to chaos because, you know, there are people who believe that HIV doesn't cause AIDS, and do you really want to give them an equal shot in the schools? And,
but Charles Haynes was saying, and I think Carol was talking about it before, that she thinks there should be a way of teaching it, maybe not in biology class, but are they in comparative religion or just a comparative thought class about how truth is arrived at?
Well, we want people to have a good liberal education. We want people to be exposed to different worldviews, but it has to be done in a way that's appropriate in the curriculum. And it seems to me the scientific community bears the burden of helping high school science teachers understand, look, here are, in fact, some problems with the theories that we're presenting, some questions, some places where there's an argument. I think that if we signal, if the scientific community particularly signals that, of course, we debate these things and let students in on that, it would help. But in terms of religious disputes, worldview disputes, yes, put them in a place in the curriculum where teachers who are prepared to do so can teach how different people see the world. That it lets students in on that as well.
Kenneth,
but
you
Ira, if I could,
yeah, sure, absolutely, Ira. The one of the things that I would urge Charles to do is to take a look at my textbook, because one of the things that we point out is that evolutionary theory hasn't solved every single question about the origin of species, and in fact, on the day it does, it'll be time to close every department of evolutionary biology in the world, because all questions will have been answered. But cell theory doesn't solve every question in cell biology, and atomic theory doesn't solve every question in physics. The important point is to present science fairly and openly in a way that points these things out. And I enjoyed very much the phone call from Jameson, the prospective teacher. He said he was going to teach the North view and the South view, and I think that's absolutely terrific about the Civil War. But I hope when he teaches that view, he does tell those students who won the first Battle of Bull Run, and who won the Battle of Gettysburg, and who burned Atlanta. Because these are not North and South views, these are historical facts. And this
and
is the sort of thing that we'd like to see in science teaching as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have decided some things.
David, did you want to jump in?
I think that's correct.
David, did you want to
jump
in? Go ahead.
Two things. First of all, it strikes me as rather odd that we can require students to learn Ken Miller's views of these controversial issues, but we can prevent, he would argue you get to run to the courthouse and prevent the presentation of the view that contradicts him. And the other thing I wanted to comment on was the function of science education. It is not simply to teach people the facts about science, but to prepare them to deal with controversies where competing views and even competing values are at stake. When we talk about global warming or stem cell research or the safety of a prescription drug, you're going to have scientists presenting a case in which they have a stake in the outcome. And as future citizens, our students should be able to understand a scientific argument and recognize what is scientific and how to deal with it, and not completely separate these issues of values as though they belonged in another classroom. True, you have to approach the question scientifically, but I think there's a desire to push this question out of the science classroom, and I think it's not only an important question in itself, but it's a golden opportunity to teach students how to study a scientific subject and study it scientifically.
Talking about creation evolution this hour in science classes on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones to, is it Foria in New London, Connecticut?
That's Faria.
I'm sorry. I didn't have any accent aigus on my
That's all
screen.
Right. Yes, I have 2 points that I would like to make. The first one is we must remember that not all Christians out there are either against of evolution or anything like that. There are Christians that do believe that God created, and that the mechanism that he used was that of evolution. So there is some kind of intermediate point that I think needs to be remembered and considered. The other thing I wanted to point out, I'm a biology professor at college level, and I'm a doctor in science, and I have to deal with this even in college level. Some students come with these concerns, and what I teach them is, you know, here in this classroom, we're going to learn what science says, the method of science. Science deals with evidence, with facts, and whatever point has the greatest amount of evidence at a point, that's the prevailing view. There was a time back, early 20th century, in which proteins were thought to be the genetic material. Now we know that it's DNA, the genetic material, and it wasn't until the Hershey-Chase experiment that we knew actually it wasn't proteins, it's DNA. So then as evidence accumulates, prevailing views may change. So what we have is to understand that that's how science occurs, and we're learning in this classroom how what is the prevailing view, and in the test you just give me what I'm teaching you scientists says, but it's not intended to necessarily change anybody else's mind or be necessarily something that they have to wrestle with. They just give it to me business-like. So I'll take your reaction off the air.
Right, thank you. Any reaction?
I think that's a fantastic comment, and just to emphasize the point that many, many Christians have no problem at all with evolution. I think that's tremendously valuable to point out, because every time this issue comes up, a lot of people think, oh, it's the atheists versus the Christians, and that's really not what it is. You know, the Pope himself is basically a theistic evolutionist. You know, Kenneth Miller can tell you more about that. But yeah, it's that's
I can tell you more
important.
About the Pope.
And, you know, certain scientists like Richard Dawkins sometimes write stuff that sounds like, you know, evolution supports atheism, but that's not the only view among scientists.
But on the other hand, you have the President of the United States who's gone to Harvard and Yale saying himself, you know, the verdict is still out on evolution.
Well, Ira, in all due fairness to the current occupant of that office, it's worth remembering back 4 years ago when his opponent, Al Gore, said pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. This is a safe position, it seems, for politicians to take. And, you know, on the point that the caller made, and I agree with Nick, that was a tremendous point to make. One of my reasons for opposing the notion that we should take into the biology classroom an either-or approach, either it's intelligent design and creationism or it's evolution, is because I think it's destructive of faith. I'm a Roman Catholic. I brought my children up that way. And I would hate for them to have gone, when they were in public schools, in grade school and high school, to go into a classroom where a teacher told them, if you accept the overwhelming scientific evidence for evolution, you've got to abandon your faith. Or, if you hold to your faith, you've got to turn your back on science. And I think that's an awful message for young people, and it's one of the reasons why I think we really have to keep science in the science classroom.
But we also have a predicament. Some teachers are just going to refuse to use the word evolution because of all the ruckus it's going to raise in their community. And so they won't they'll go for 4 years without mentioning the word evolution. And isn't that throwing out the baby with the bathwater?
Of course, it would be.
That happens a lot, actually.
You
know, the things that get in the news are when a legislature or a school board challenges, you know, evolution education. But much of what happens, you know, that nobody hears about is just sort of self-censorship because of community pressure. And, you know, the teachers, bless their hearts, I was recently at a biology teachers convention, and these teachers, you know, they work their hearts out, and many of them, they know that their job is to teach good science, and sometimes, you know, it's sort of a damn the torpedoes approach because, you know, they know they'll get flack, but they really feel that that's their commitment. So I think, you know, the teachers oftentimes get a lot of flack for that, but they really are doing their jobs well many times.
Now, gentlemen,
school board resolutions and stickers really put teachers in an untenable position, making it very uncomfortable and political to teach good science. And I think that's what is unfortunate about this. That's not the place to work this out.
Right.
I mean, should kids be in on the controversy? I hope they can be. I hope we can reach a point where we find place in the curriculum to have an intellectual debate, and teachers are prepared to lead that.
We'll have to follow that because we've run out of time. And we will follow this debate as we have over the years. I want to thank my guests Kenneth Miller, Charles Haynes, David K. DeWolf, and Nick Matzey for talking about evolution in the classroom and creationism this hour. And also, stay with us. We'll be right back after we've run out of breaks, I can see. We've got to end this hour. So I'm Ira Flatow in New York.